so very excited to have Doug Abrams on with us again today. Welcome and thank you for listening to Which Way Is Life, the podcast designed to help you live a healthier, inspired life. I'm your host, Bill Klaproth. Doug was on with us on episode number 32. If you want to go back and listen to that, it was all about the Book of Joy, which is fabulous. Doug is the co-founder of HumanJourney.com along with the Archbishop Desmond Tutu. It's a public benefit company working to share life-changing and world-changing ideas. On episode 32, we talked about the Book of Joy, which featured Archbishop Tutu and His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, their philosophies, the state of the world, and of the inherently human trait we call joy. And now Doug is out with the newly released The Book of Joy Journal. It's a companion to The Book of Joy, and it guides journalers with inspiring quotes from the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Tutu to help them find joy in their own lives. We're going to talk about that book today and help you get the absolute most out of it. Doug, so happy to have you back with me today. You know the drill. You know what my first question is. I like to start the show with the one thing. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay. Can you quickly share with us one thing someone can do to improve their life today?
Yes. I think all they have to do is recognize that joy is a choice, that they can actually shift their perspective away from the pain and sorrow of what's bothering them in their life and choose to be joyful.
I like it. So you have a choice. We all have a choice, and we can choose joy if we want it.
Absolutely. There's like this incredible story that I heard about Archbishop Tutu when he was in a refugee camp in Sudan, and he was surrounded by all of this incredible suffering and misery of these people who didn't know whether their next meal was coming from, where they were sleeping that night, whether their children were going to be safe. And as they're in this place of incredible despair, he steps into this crowd and he begins to sing. And the entire crowd begins to sing with him. And then he begins to dance. And then they dance with him. And one of my friends who was on the mission with him asked, how could you possibly feel joyful in a place of such despair? And he said, it is not that I am not sad, because I do cry, but I choose joy. And even when we are despairing, even when we are crying, all the more so we must bring joy into the world. And I think that recognition that joy, which is our internal state of well-being and our birthright, is something that is accessible to us at all times in our life, which doesn't mean that we ignore the fear and the anger or the sadness, but the recognition that we have choice in our emotional life is incredibly liberating and powerful.
That's a great story, and that's a great reminder to all of us. You can just shift like that. He was in the middle of that despair all around him, and he decided to sing. And in that moment, he was able to shift and change the perspective of everyone.
Exactly. And it's interesting you mentioned the word perspective, because in the Book of Joy, the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu outline these eight pillars of joy. And the first one is perspective. And it's so powerful because as when we focus on the heartache and heartbreak of our lives and of our world, and there is plenty to focus on, and, you know, the news cycle is feeding it to us 24/7, We think that that is actually the entire reality of our lives or in our world. And perspective, as they described it, is about getting to step back and see the long sweep of our life and the long sweep of our life together, and to see that heartache and that heartbreak in its proper place, which is not to ignore it or not address it, but to recognize that it's not all.
Mm-hmm. I like how you put that, the long sweep of life. I never thought about it that way, but that's a really interesting way to look at it. So you mentioned the Book of Joy. Let's dig into that just a little bit so my listener has an understanding of that. So the Book of Joy, you mentioned one of the eight tenets. Can you tell us the general overall message of the book and maybe just quickly share the other seven?
Sure. So the message, what we were doing is we had this incredible opportunity to spend a week with the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu in Dharamsala, India, the Dalai Lama's home in exile, discussing how do we experience joy and happiness in the face of life's adversity. How do we, you know, so that's what we were after, was how do we take joy, which is so often a kind of fleeting state, a kind of experience that we have when we're listening to a good song or eating a delicious piece of chocolate cake, and then, you know, boom, the song's over, the cake is gone, and then we're, you know, not, we're back to fear, anger, and sadness, or we're not feeling that joy anymore. And how do we actually turn it from that kind of a fleeting state into the kind of enduring character trait that these two men have? Because their joy is not dependent on the cake or the song. It's something that they have cultivated inside themselves that bubbles up from within.
I love that.
And so as you were asking about the eight pillars of joy, so one of the things they told us, so the book is really like this, really fun opportunity for readers to be with the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu in this really intimate way where we see their humanity, hear their stories and their wisdom, but they also share their own struggles. And actually are, you know, their incredible sense of humor. I mean, they're, as you know, they're like a comedy duo as much as this kind of two revered holy men. And so for the whole, throughout the whole week where we were there with this five-camera crew filming everything, and we got to just watch them relishing their friendship and teasing each other, and the Dalai Lama getting to dance for the first time in his life, Dalai Lama teaching us how to meditate. It was really incredible, and over the course of that time together, they outlined eight what they called pillars of joy, because they said if we chase after happiness, it's the fastest way to miss the bus, and that actually if we cultivate these eight pillars of joy, then we naturally experience that happiness. It kind of grows out of those other qualities. And the qualities that they shared with us were four pillars of the mind and four pillars of the heart. And the four pillars of the mind are perspective, humility, humor, which was quite fun to have them share as one of the fundamental pillars of joy, and acceptance. And then the four pillars of the heart, which are forgiveness, gratitude, compassion, and generosity.
All right. You just said something interesting there. You said we don't want to chase after happiness. We want to naturally experience happiness. And then I'm thinking, as you gave the rest of the eight pillars, if you embody those eight and you just try to incorporate those eight into your life, naturally, you won't even kind of know it. You will just automatically start to experience happiness instead of like, okay, if I do this, I'll be happier. When I get this, I'll be happier. When I achieve that, I'll be happy. So by just embodying these eight principles, we will be able to naturally experience happiness. Is that kind of right?
Exactly right. Exactly. And, you know, kind of example, and if you would, like, kind of one of the most powerful kind of takeaways that they said was they talked about how our greatest joy is when we bring joy to others. So when we often think that, you know, we need happiness for ourselves, but actually the fastest way and the most dependable way to experience more joy and happiness in our own life is when we share it and bring it to others.
Our greatest joy is when we bring joy to others. That's a great quote. You should tweet that out. Tweet that out right now, Doug. I like it.
Thank you. Well, one of the really beautiful ways that Archbishop Tutu said it is, you will be surprised by the joy when you go beyond your own self-regard, which I thought was just such a powerful way of saying, you know, when we stop our own self preoccupation and thinking about ourselves all the time and really go outward to others, that's when we encounter our greatest joy.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's shift to the Book of Joy Journal. What was the inspiration for this?
Well, we were hearing from readers around the world, the book, again, it's just been incredible to see how it's been embraced all over, around the world, that the book had stopped them from committing suicide. It had helped them deal with their terminal illness. It had helped them deal with the death of a loved one. One person even told us, we actually heard that one person had actually sent it out as their dying gift to all of their friends and family that arrived after they had died. Just incredibly powerful, the impact that the book was having on people's lives. And the idea of the journal was to give people an opportunity to actually take the lessons and the practices, because we included the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu's joy practices in the book, and actually reflect in their own life about how these values and principles, these pillars of joy, these obstacles of joy, live for themselves. Because ultimately, you know, we're all, as Archbishop Tutu said, we're all masterpieces in the making. Or as the Dalai Lama said, you know, he said, I am still a student every day learning. And Archbishop Tutu kind of said, yes, you know, teasing him, and said, "You are wonderful." And the Dalai Lama said, "I expected that kind of comment from you." But we are all students. We are all learning. We're all, as Archbishop Tutu said, learning to be human. And so the journal is just a resource for people to use, to reflect on what they're reading in the Book of Joy and what they're experiencing in their life, and trying to create more joy in their life and in the lives of their loved ones.
More with my guest today, Doug Abrams, in a moment. But first, we want to tell you about a brand new book called Memory Rescue that has just been published that could really help you or a loved one if you seem to be forgetting things lately. Let's hear from the author.
Hi, I'm Dr. Daniel Amen, author of a new book called Memory Rescue. Memory Rescue teaches you how to prevent future problems, but if you're having memory problems now, how to rescue it, how to get it back so that everything in your life can be better. Plant the habits that I talk in your life. I know it'll make a dramatic difference for you and for those you love.
So if you feel a bit forgetful lately, check out Memory Rescue by Dr. Daniel Amen. Just go to memoryrescuebook.com. That's memoryrescuebook.com. I can see now the purpose of this book. It's a year-long guide with numbered sections from 1 to 365. So every day there's a space for you to journal, right?
Exactly. And reflect on that day, because it is a daily practice. You know, the Buddhist monks, they wake up every morning, and this was a really powerful practice that's been really transformative for me, and they set their intention for the day. Very simple, you know, kind of who do they want to be that day? How do they want to be in their lives? Not just kind of what they want to do on their to-do list, but how do they want to actually encounter the world and experience their life? And then every night they reflect on that goal and on whether they fulfilled their intention. And I think a daily practice like that, or the kind of meditative practices that we give in the book, including this very powerful joy meditation that they share that kind of summarizes the eight pillars or incorporates the eight pillars, those simple practices really can help us to really transform ourselves over the course of a year.
So I was going to ask you, how should we use this book? And you just were kind of describing that. So every day, should we try to journal our intention every day?
Yeah, I mean, I think people will use it in different ways. I think that kind of intention setting is a powerful way to do it. I think we can also use it as just a place, a very personal, intimate place to share what we're experiencing and where we're struggling what we're dealing with. I've worked with one of the neuroscientists who we quote in the book as an author that I have the pleasure of working with, Ethan Cross, and he talks about how journaling is this very profound process in the brain where it's what neuroscientists call self-distancing. And actually, by putting our issues on the page and getting them out of our head, getting our thoughts and feelings out of our head, we are able to kind of have some little distance from them instead of having to just kind of react to our problems with, you know, kind of with fear, anger, and sadness. We're able to pause and choose how we want to respond to them. And it's a very powerful process just to kind of get out of our own heads and get our experience onto the page.
Mm-hmm. So how should we set expectations for this then? Like, you know, after a month, I'll start to feel different, or, you know, how should we set expectations for this, or how will we realize it's working or I am feeling a difference?
I think, you know, that's a great question. I think that, you know, it'll be different for different people. And I would hate mm-hmm. to say, you know, kind of, you know, within 30 days, you'll have X
right.
experience. It really depends where people are in their life. But I think, you know, and you know, really, that journaling is a lifelong practice. Ideally, it's a wonderful thing to do for ongoing. But I think that actually people have a really kind of a profound transformational experience from what we're hearing from the first page of the Book of Joy. And, you know, when they actually, that's just from reading it, but when they actually try to reflect on it and incorporate it with the journal, I think I think people will have a very powerful experience right from the first pages in the first couple days of doing the reflection.
So is there a certain time of day that's better to journal, and do you have any other tips for us?
That's another great question. I think it really depends on when it fits in somebody's life and whether they're dealing like we were with twins and three kids, you know, and kind of juggling morning routines, or whether they have quiet time in the morning, whether they have time after their kids go to sleep. Or I think often the first thing when we get up in the morning, even, you know, before we set the alarm 5 minutes earlier and, you know, before we, you know, rush off to work or get the kids up, that can be a great time. Often at the end of the day, you know, kind of actually just sitting in bed for a few minutes and setting, even if you can't write it, you know, journal at that moment, just setting an intention, even while you're brushing your teeth. And then at the end of the day, you know, if you've got a little more time to journal and reflect on what your intention was and whether you met that intention or what else you experienced that day, I think, you know, often the beginning and the end of the day are really good times. Others may find that lunch, you know, during their lunch break or other times are really ideal for them, or when their kids are napping. It'll depend, obviously, on where people are in their own life stage and what they're juggling.
Well, those are good suggestions. So experiment and find out what works for you. I even think carrying the book around with you, have it in the car, take it with you in your bag. And when inspiration hits, when you have a moment where you're like, oh, I mean, this is important to me, I'm going to write this down, I think that makes a lot of sense. And before we wrap up, I just have a few more questions for you, Doug. Is it a good idea to take, you know, the eight pillars and say, you know what, I'm going to concentrate on pillar number three for the next week or so and really dig into that and really journal about that. Is that a potential idea to try to use the companion piece with the book?
That's a great idea, actually. Yes, that's a wonderful way to use the journal to really, you know, focus on the areas, the pillars that you're reading about. And, you know, many people find that forgiveness or gratitude are really profound and important for them, and that's one of the things that can really lead to more joy in their life. Others will find that perspective or acceptance are things that they're grappling with. So it'll really be unique for each person, which is why, so, you know, it's really a kind of choose your own adventure kind of journal. You know, it's not super directive in terms of how you have to do it. But I think, as you're suggesting, doing it in tandem with reading the Book of Joy is a very powerful way to do the journal.
What is your favorite of the techniques that they use. What's your favorite? What really resonated with you?
Gosh, it's such a great question. Well, you know, there are 50 pages of different techniques and practices in the Book of Joy because there were so, you know, there were practices for dealing with suffering, dealing with, you know, kind of anger and fear. I mean, there are so many different practices that they shared with us. But I think the joy practice meditation that that we share at the end of the book is really so powerful because it takes us through each of those eight pillars and allows us to take a problem that we're grappling with in our life, whether it's, you know, having a child who's suffering, whether it's a boss that we're having difficulty with, whatever our you know, whether it's the kind of challenge that we're facing in the world. One of the fascinating things, we gathered 1,000 questions from the world in a couple of days before we went to Dharamsala, and the question that most people wanted to ask was not actually how they have more, can have more joy in their own life personally, but how can they live with joy in a world so filled with suffering? Mm. And so dealing with even, you know, the suffering we witness around us, and whether that's from earthquakes and hurricanes and fires, you know, to political animosity, all the challenges that we're facing in our world, these practices can really help us to shift our perspective and to be more effective in responding to our own pain and the pain in our world. And I think that joy practice was probably the most profound in terms of a practice. There's also this incredibly powerful Tonglin practice, which is a traditional Buddhist practice where we take on suffering and put out love. There were prayer practices that Archbishop Tutu shared from his daily prayer practice that were very powerful. But I think also, you know, just as a very simple baseline, that intention-setting practice in the morning and that reflection on our day at the end of the day that Buddhist monks do is so simple and so easy for all of us to do and so life-changing as we, you know, start learning every day. I'd say those are some of them that were most impactful for me personally.
Well, I was just going to ask you in my last question, how can we show more understanding and compassion towards one another? And you were just talking about pain in our world and, you know, of course, we have discourse and politics and we're arguing with people that don't share our viewpoint. So is setting the intention, is that a way we can try to show more understanding and compassion towards one another? Do you have any other tips on that last question? How do we do that every day? Because as you know, in America here, it's getting crazy. It seems like it's left against right and it's not good. So how can we maybe have more compassion towards people that don't share our viewpoint on a daily, regular basis?
I think that's such a great question. I think there are a couple components to it. One is recognizing, as the Dalai Lama says, that we are all the same human being. You know, we all have the same hopes and fears and dreams, that we may have different political views of how we can realize those dreams, but we all fundamentally have the same human joy and sorrow. And if we can remember that, you know, the Archbishop Tutu fought for decades against a racist apartheid regime, but every morning he would pray for the well-being of the president of the apartheid state, which you can imagine when he actually had to meet with him and negotiate with him, really transformed how he engaged with him. So I think just that fundamental compassion and recognition that we are all the same human being, that's an important place to start. I think then the recognition, that doesn't mean that, and recognizing the challenges that we face in our world, not denying them or wishing that we had a different government or a different news, you know, which is one of the pillars of acceptance. But acceptance does not mean acquiescence. It doesn't mean we accept that the reality that is the reality that always needs to be, and that we actually work to try to create the world and the country that we carry in our hearts and that we want. But that we do it from a place of curiosity and humility rather than correctness and anger and hatred, and recognize that actually we are, you know, not better or worse than others, that whatever political party we're in, we have our gifts and our challenges. No political party's got it all right. No ideology has it all right. We're all struggling to figure it out and to create the lives and the world that we are trying to give to our children and grandchildren. And that if we can do it from that place of kindness and compassion rather than anger and rancor, we actually will not only feel better, but will actually be much more effective.
So true. Come at it from an angle of kindness and compassion. And we are all the same human being, and we all have the same human joy and sorrow. Just try to remember that next time you may be talking with someone that doesn't share your same viewpoint. Doug, thank you so much for your time. I always love talking to you, and thank you for your hard work on the Book of Joy and now the Book of Joy Companion Journal. So good. How can we connect with you?
Bill, there's a website, bookofjoy.org, which people can visit, and the book is available all over the world. And if people are interested in reaching out to me personally, my website is ideaarchitects.com, where I have the privilege of working with visionaries like the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu on books and media that creates a wiser, healthier, and more just world.
Love it.
It's a great privilege to be on your show, Bill.
Well, thank you, Doug. I appreciate that. I always love having you on, and hopefully we can have you on again. Doug, thank you again for your time today. We appreciate it. And we're going to put all of those links up on the show notes page at radiomd.com. Doug, have a great day, and thank you again.
Thank you, Bill, and thanks to your listeners as well.
So great talking to Doug again. Love what he's doing. So cool. And thank you for listening. You know, I appreciate it. And remember to catch every episode of Which Way Is Life. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or my show page at radiomd.com. And if I can ask a favor, please rate and review the podcast on iTunes. That way I get a bigger audience and it gives us a chance to help more people. Which Way Is Life is produced by radiomd.com, award-winning health podcasts. I'd also like to thank my producer, Pamela Moore. I'm Bill Klaproth. You can find me at Which Way Is Life on Twitter and Facebook. You can also check out the show notes at radiomd.com for all of my episodes. Thanks for listening and stay well.